Well, we are getting close to the US Fed's preferred inflation measure. But before that, after the US closed today, Christopher Waller is talking. So we could see some volatility as we head into the Easter break. But Easter might be getting in the way a bit. The Japanese yen, a bit of intervention now might add to that volatility. Plus, it is the end of the quarter as well. Could Easter come at a worse time? Well, actually, I'm quite glad it's here. Personally, it is Thursday, the 28th of March, 2024. It's the Morning Call from NAB. Good morning. Well, bond yields are quite a bit lower today, down 4 basis points for 10-year treasuries, down 6 for 10-year bunds in Germany. Gilts are down 4 basis points in the UK. Aussie 10 years lost 2 basis points yesterday, down to 4%, ducking 1 basis point lower than that on futures overnight. Not a lot happening with the US dollar. It's marginally up on the DXY. The Aussie dollar is down 0.1% to below 65.3 US cents, but a bit of movement in the yen, almost down to 152 yen to the US dollar before it bounced back a little with a bit of intervention that we'll discuss today. US equities have bounced back from the losses that we saw in that final hour before close yesterday, and the S&P at a new record high, up 0.9% at the close today. The Dow up almost 1.25%. The Nasdaq, that was struggling most of the session, closed up 0.5%, and the Russell 2000 climbed 2.1%. Gains in Europe as well. In fact, the DAX is up 0.5% at close. The FTSE 100, another one that's barely showing any gains, just in the green. And falls in oil, then a bounce back. So WTI and Brent were both down about 0.6% not so long ago, but they've recovered almost all of those losses. So the good news yesterday was a weaker than anticipated CPI for Australia, sticking at 3.4%, not the 3.5% that many had expected. In fact, let's be honest, NAB was expecting 3.6%. So let's talk about that with JB Weir's Sally Auld this morning. So it was goods, wasn't it, pulling it down, but we still got, you know, a bit of a worry with services inflation, it's fair to say.
Yeah, it was a mixed result. So as you said, it came in, you know, just a touch below the consensus at 3.4%. And I think in unseasonally adjusted terms, that was a rise of 0.2% in the month. And I think there are, you know, a couple of themes that we can take out of the number, you know, bearing in mind that it's not the full set of inflation data. But, you know, what we're seeing with the January and February inflation releases is that this whole sort of tailwind to disinflation that lower goods prices provided is basically run its course. And so goods disinflation or lower goods prices, you know, isn't going to be the help to first quarter inflation that it was to the fourth quarter. And that's a theme I think that we're seeing, you know, not just here in Australia, but in other economies as well. Services, there was some sort of, you know, tentative good news with the prices of some services for you know, lower in the month. However, you know, rents were still up 0.8% in the month, which is pretty solid, and insurance costs are annualizing still at 15%. So some mixed signals on the services part of the inflation basket. But the way I would look at these numbers is to say, you know, they're broadly consistent with the trajectory for inflation that the RBA has in its forecasts, you know, as of February this year. And so it's a bit like that fourth quarter GDP number. It's just going to give the RBA, you know, a little bit more confidence that this track that they think they're on, so this path where growth slows, inflation gradually comes down, you know, that they're actually on that path. And so, you know, in that regard, you know, luckily for the RBA, they don't have to make a call on these numbers, because we do get the full set of inflation numbers on the 24th of April, and that will be before the RBA's next meeting. So they don't really have to worry too much about yesterday's release, in the sense that they will get complete data, you know, in 3 or 4 weeks.
And it's pretty close to their SOMP forecast anyway from February, isn't it? Really, it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So, you know, this will just give them, it'll be another data release that says, yep, we feel just that little bit more confident that, you know, things are playing out as we forecast. Yeah. And so, you know, again, what that does, even though the governor's played a very straight bat and said we're not ruling anything in, we're not ruling anything out, you know, I think what it does do is, you know, just give them a little bit more confidence that, yeah, perhaps they don't really need to worry too much about the risk of higher rates anytime soon.
Yeah, and rental growth, I mean, I'm not the economist here, and I'm sure I've said this numerous times before, but I mean, it's hard to expect rents to go down when you've got a housing shortage and higher mortgages. So landlords obviously going to try and pass it on if they can, aren't they?
Yeah, so I think you're talking to sort of two different dynamics around rents. You know, one is just the demand and supply story for housing. So as you noted, there's a shortage, and to the extent that, you know, rents is the price you pay for, you know, getting or obtaining housing services, that will put upward pressure on that price. And then the other dynamic is just really all about, you know, the cost of carry for investors, you know, who own mortgages, and you know that that's gone up as, yeah. as mortgage rates have gone up. And as you said, you know, one way to deal with that is to put rents up as well. So I guess is where, you know, now more confident that we that the peak in rates has been put in, you know, for the cycle, that that second dynamic is probably going to be less influential going forward. And it's really about, you know, how quickly can we resolve that shortage between demand for housing and the supply of housing?
We get retail sales as well for Australia, don't we? We got NAB's online retail sales yesterday. There was a bit of an adjustment to January's number, which had been up at 11.1% growth. That's actually been revised down to 3.5%. And then the new number for February, just 1% growth. So it is slowing, but it is still rising. So it'll be interesting to see what the overall picture is.
Yeah, that's right. So I think the online retail sales index for February, as you said, up 1%. The annual rate's still running at about 15% year on year. That's slowed a little bit too, but it's still pretty solid. But again, consistent with what we see in just the retail sales numbers from the ABS, which is that, and also, you know, the quarterly consumption numbers, which is that, you know, household consumption remains under pressure. But that's all part of what we should expect when rates go up and puts pressure on households' disposable income. So I think, you know, again, another piece of data that's broadly consistent with the big dynamics or trends that we're seeing in the economy at the moment, which is that slower GDP growth, you know, in large part driven by just softer household consumption, and those online retail numbers, you know, I think reflect that story too.
Now, not big moves in currencies, but maybe that's about to change. So I mentioned the yen getting close to 152 to the dollar. It has been losing ground, of course, since 2021, and it doesn't seem to be showing any signs of stopping, does it? So is intervention likely? And, you know, maybe Easter's the time to do it. Certainly, if you throw that on top of quarter end, we could be in for a bit of volatility, couldn't we?
Yeah, potentially. So, you know, clearly, you know, dollar yen pushing up against that 152 level has brought a meeting of, you know, the central bank, regulators, government ministers, and the finance minister was out on the wires yesterday saying they're watching market moves with high sense of urgency. And he talked about, you know, the finance ministry taking bold measures, which in the past has been associated, I guess, with direct intervention in currency markets. And so it's important to remember this is not the Bank of Japan's mandate to worry about this. This is all under the remit of the Ministry of Finance. So hence when the finance minister speaks about it, markets tend to listen. And so I think they've sent some pretty clear signals that should the market continue to sort of try and push dollar yen higher. And I think, you know, 152, that level is obviously, you know, a pretty significant level for the market that, yes, direct intervention is likely. And so, you know, often you think about, you know, when intervention can be successful in markets, and it's often when, you know, the currency is very over or undervalued. And at the moment, you know, the yen is super, super cheap. So, you know, whether you're looking at nominal exchange rates or real exchange rates, it looks really cheap on those levels. And the positioning data does tell us that, you know, investors are short the yen. And so, you know, if the Ministry of Finance comes out and intervenes, then, you know, you could perhaps argue that you've got a reasonable setup in terms of how investors are positioned and the valuation of the currency, that they might have some success there. But it's a difficult one because, you know, the Bank of Japan, you know, was dovish. They basically said, yep, we're getting rid of yield curve control and ETF purchases and all sorts of things, but we're not in a rush and we want to do this really gradually and we're still going to buy heaps of JGBs and we don't want 10-year yields rising aggressively. And so when we look at real rates in Japan, you know, they're still deeply negative, which is a significant contrast to many other markets, particularly the US, where real rates are, you know, quite positive. And so it's hard for the currency against that backdrop to do much more except drift weaker.
Yeah. All right. So US inflation, the core PCE deflator, the Fed's preferred measure of inflation, of course. There's probably quite a bit resting on this. This is on Friday, though. The problem is markets really can't react to it because it's Good Friday. And even though they're releasing on Friday, I think, aren't they? It's the markets are closed. The bond markets and the equity markets are closed. But before that, maybe a chance to respond. Christopher Waller is talking at the Economic Club of New York straight after the podcast today, actually, just after the markets close.
Yeah, that'll be a pretty significant speech, I suspect. But yes, it is an interesting setup going into this number because obviously we had the FOMC last week where Powell was sort of said, you know, January and February numbers, it's just a bump. We're not that worried about it. Still on track. You know, everyone just sort of relax. And then he even sort of gave, you know, quite unusually, a fair bit of detail around what the Fed's or the FOMC's expectation is for this core PCE number on Friday night, which he said, you know, should come in sort of under 0.3%. And so, you know, the market consensus is for a rise of 0.3. So I guess the interesting story will be, you know, what if we get a number that's, you know, stronger than the Fed expects and sort of shows that ongoing resilience in some of those sort of core measures of inflation. As you said, it's going to be difficult for traders because bond market in the US will be shut and in most other markets as well. So, you know, an important release given the setup in that we have going into it.
And a splatting of other data coming up, the final read on the GDP growth rate for Q4. We get the weekly jobless claims, pending home sales. We get the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey, the final read on that. We get the 30-year mortgage rate, which sprang back up to 6.87% last week. It was heading down, but it started to head back up again, so it'll be interesting to see what that does. Inflation data for various parts of Europe, plus the unemployment rate for Germany, retail sales for Germany. Actually, we might be able to build up a bit of a picture of the direction of travel in Europe. I mean, we keep on hearing optimistic tones, don't we? I'm not quite sure if optimism is good for bringing rates down or not, but you know, a bit of data to take in before the end of the week.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Europe's been interesting because, you know, just perennially disappointed, you know, in 2022 and 2023 in terms of people's expectations about where the economy would get to. But just recently, in the last sort of month or two, we're starting to see some more encouraging signs or some green shoots, and so people are starting to talk a little bit more positively about the outlook in Europe. But like you said, you know, we'll wait and see. I think people have been trapped on that one many times before.
They have, exactly. And Canada's GDP as well, we should mention. What are we expecting there?
Yeah, so this is Canada's interesting at the moment because, you know, they have had some softer inflation and some softer, you know, activity numbers. So this is monthly GDP number for January. So the market's looking at a pretty decent rise of 0.4%, but that'd leave the annual rate, you know, only at 0.8%. So, you know, well below trend. And I guess, you know, on those sorts of numbers, consistent with this idea that the Bank of Canada is pretty close to cutting rates soon. Mm.
All right. Quickly, before you go, there's a new report out this week, isn't there, from JB Weir that was being released on the growth of women and wealth, which, you know, it seems like there's a lot of high net worth female investors, a growing number of them, which is great news. But this report highlights that there are some challenges with that as well.
Yeah, that's right. Really interesting report, which, you know, for any listener interested is on the JB Weir website, which is jbweir.com.au. But basically, the sort of broad thrust of the report is effectively that, you know, over the next decade, for lots of different reasons, you know, there's going to be a significant transfer of wealth into female hands. And this is all derived from things like that big intergenerational wealth transfer, where we think 65% of that is going to land in women's hands. We've also got, you know, increasing divorce rate amongst older couples, which obviously sees in many instances women take, you know, 50% of the wealth there. In Australia, we're also creating female millionaires at a much higher rate than we are male millionaires. And then there's also something the report talks about, which is interesting, called the oldest daughter effect. And that's when the wealth transitions from one generation to the next. More often than not, it ends up with the oldest daughter actually taking over management of that wealth or the family's financial affairs. And that's regardless of whether she's the eldest sibling or not. It's they call it the oldest daughter effect. So anyway, you know, to cut a long story.
That's interesting.
It is, isn't it?
It's in safer hands in the daughter's hands rather than the family. Yeah, well, there we are.
And so you've got this really sort of significant transfer of wealth into female hands, but also an industry that's not really, I think, set up to take advantage of this, in the sense that the report talks to some of the barriers that women still, you know, come into accessing financial services, you know, particularly in wealth management or wealth advice. And so I think this report, you know, is you know, quite sort of industry leading, in the sense that, you know, it's come up with a really compelling case as to why, you know, firms such as JB Weir should really be on the front foot and thinking about how best we can service, you know, women clients, just simply because they're going to be controlling a lot of the wealth over the next generation. The report also tells us that, you know, women are quite savvy investors, so they're well educated, they're interested, but the issue is that, you know, the industry is probably not appreciated that fact as perhaps, you know, as well as it could have done. So a really fascinating read, and if you're interested, available on the JB Weir website.
Excellent. Very good. Have a great Easter, and we'll catch you very soon. Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, Phil.
And this isn't our last podcast before Easter. We have the weekend edition still to come, out a day earlier for the long weekend. So it's out this afternoon with Bronwyn Curtis, a celebrated Aussie economist, giving her take on the Fed, the ECB and the Bank of England, amongst others. The Fed, she says, might actually move later than many people think. But for the Bank of England, well, this.
The very high numbers on inflation are dropping out of the index, plus energy prices have come down. So we could get back to 2% inflation, April, May, June time, and actually below 2% going into the second half of the year. So, you know, should they be cutting rates now? Well, actually, they need to cut them soon, I think.
Bronwyn Curtis gives her perspective on monetary policy right now. That's this afternoon on the weekend edition. Join me for that. Then back on Tuesday morning. So enjoy your Easter. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. I'll see you soon.